Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart Debates Atheist Zaketh, a Psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com.
Warning, there's truth up ahead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart, and I have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Jonathan Witt with the Discovery Institute. And he and I, we aired the first part of the interview last week, and we just kept going. So there is a lot of fun information from his book, Intelligent Design Uncensored, that he co-authored with William Dembski. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this discussion of the evidence for a designer for life on Earth. We see it frequently. In order to explain complexity, they often posit increased complexity, vastly greater complexity, because what they're trying to do is explain complexity. I think I've noticed Darwinists doing that all the time. And their goal is to explain, why is this complex, sophisticated, interrelated system? Why is it here? Why is it functioning so well? And they have to start with the simplest principles. And what they really do is introduce wild additional complexity, like aliens brought life to Earth. Well, now that's really complex, because not only do you have to evolve life originally on another planet, but now those aliens have to do star travel and seed it here on Earth.
Yeah, so they move it. They brush it under the rug. My co-author, William Dembski, on this book, he's a fantastic advanced mathematician. He's done some work on this tendency, and I think one of his papers that gets into this, if any of our viewers are into fairly advanced mathematics, called Searching Large Spaces. In that article and some of his other work, he talks about this tendency to, we can't explain it here, so we'll back it up, and it happened here. Now you've got an equally complex or more complex system that you've now got to deal with.
Well, Dr. Witt, perhaps you could answer this for me. I've been asked this, and I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer for a lot of things, but this comes up somewhat frequently. When Francis Crick, co-discoverer of DNA, tries to comprehend how this complexity can exist, he says, if you had blind people filling the solar system, and every one of them playing with a Rubik's Cube, they'd all have to get it solved at the same moment to have something equal to life on Earth originating by chance. So he says, so therefore it can't happen, so it had to happen somewhere else. So like you just said, all he does is punt. And so Richard Dawkins, being interviewed in the movie Expelled by Ben Stein, which we had a film festival. We went to see that movie 15 times on opening weekend, and Ben Stein graciously put our press release on his movie website. Richard Dawkins says, if it turns out that life is too complex to have evolved on Earth, then we know that it would have evolved somewhere else by Darwinian mechanisms and was brought to Earth. How could they not realize that they're merely punting? When that's pointed out to them, what answer do they give that they've just punted? They haven't answered the question.
Well, they'll either just avoid giving an answer, or they'll speak in vague terms about some other planet with a different geological system. But once you go into the details, you realize on any planet in the universe, you're still going to have the same set of problems. You're still going to have the intractable unlikelihood of bringing all these things together.
And then
it's when you go into it that deep, you start to see that there is this, I mean, to speak in religious terms here, there's a spiritual darkness involved here. It's not just, boy, they're smart in some areas and they're just not quite as smart in this one area. There's a spiritual darkness that they've allowed themselves to get enveloped in that's making them miss the obvious.
You talked about entropy, the second law of thermodynamics, where usable energy is being expended. And so the universe is using up its available energy, so it couldn't have been there forever. Well, the scientist Boltzmann, he ended up having his equation for entropy engraved on his tombstone. And then later, I worked for one of the baby Bells for a few years. And at AT&T, the scientist Claude Shannon, he began to investigate information theory. And he came up with equations that were very similar to Boltzmann's entropy equations regarding physics. And so Shannon was showing that you have the same problem with information. Information breaks down. So we have DNA, which is the most condensed and complex storage for information known to mankind. And Darwinism is going to claim against this concept of entropy, that all this information is going to come together randomly into the first reproducing organism.
An evolutionist will say something like, well, you can't really apply the second law of thermodynamics, the law of entropy, because the Earth isn't a closed system, and the law of entropy only applies to closed systems. But that objection also falls apart, because we're not getting inputs of information into planet Earth.
Right.
We're getting sunlight. You know, sunlight doesn't write lines of DNA. They'll also say, well, we had an oxygen environment that radically shifted. That's what led to the origin of life. Well, you know, the oxygen, you need oxygen for life, but oxygen doesn't write lines of complex information-rich
right.
DNA code.
In fact, there was a professor, Dan Steyer, who published an article in the American Journal of Physics on entropy, and he argued from a purely physics perspective that the energy input from the sun is sufficient to deal with any entropy concerns about the actual physics of life on Earth. And so I ended up in a debate on that topic, and Dan Steyer then joined the debate, which was pretty fun online. And we have that at our website, realsciencefriday.com. But the argument that we were making, the creationist, was that you cannot take units of information and units of heat and transfer them back and forth. You can't do that. It's not allowed. And they think that they are answering the problem of information entropy when they deal with heat flow. They actually think that.
Granville Sewell, he has a great book that just focuses on this issue that debunks that whole notion that, well, because we're not a closed system, then we can't use entropy. The article is In the Beginning, and that's a Discovery Institute Press book by Granville Sewell. He's a PhD mathematician at the time. I think he was at the University of Texas, El Paso. I think he was also doing some work at Texas A&M. That's an excellent book for debunking that.
And you know what? We will link to that book from our summary of today's program. For those interested, just go to realsciencefriday.com, and you could either go directly to today's program by the date, or just put in the search box WITT, W-I-T-T, and you'll go right to this interview and you'll get that link. When Darwinists argue that very improbable things happen all the time, like they say, people win the lottery, but the lottery is designed for people to win it. Otherwise, nobody would buy lottery tickets. And then they point to grains of sand on a beach, and they say the odds of these grains of sand being lined up in this way are so astronomical. It's, you know, one in a Googleplex chance. But what they don't realize is that you could stir up the sand. It doesn't matter what order the grains are, and you still have a beach. You still have a functional beach, whereas information, it has to be in a certain order. And if you rearrange the order in an encyclopedia of the letters, you no longer have an encyclopedia. Dr. Witt, it seems as though when we debate evolutionists for 20 years, it seems as though they maintain that there's no such thing as information, that they are enemies of the very concept of information.
Yeah, they completely ignore what my colleague William Dembski calls specification. We don't just have complexity, we have specified complexity. I mean, think of like if somebody took a bucket full of pennies and threw them out on the floor and they all came up heads. And you were like, oh my goodness, what are the odds of that? It must have been astronomical. There must be something going on here. Maybe they're all heads or there's some weird, you know, so somehow this was designed. And if you had a scientist walk up and say, oh, come on, they had to fall in some arrangement of all heads or tails or some combination.
Right.
It just so happened that they were this arrangement. There's nothing here to explain. Again, you'd think the guy needed to have his head checked. But that's basically when they say, well, the universe is finally tuned. It had to take some order. We wouldn't have been here to observe it and be amazed by it if it weren't finely tuned for life.
Mm-hmm.
So you get these bizarre, not explanations, but pushing it under the rug, non-explanations.
So on page 64, you deal with that topic and you talk about specified complexity. And so the signature of something that's intelligently designed is that it's complex and that it's specified, as you're describing right now. But could I play the devil's advocate for a moment? Because when I read that, I wondered if isn't specified a synonym for designed, perhaps? And if so, might there be a circular definition there? Have you guys considered that? Because there are a lot of things that are like that, like the concept of goodness or righteousness or justice. These are like fundamental concepts that you can't get lower than them. You can't drill deeper into the end states of some of our knowledge. And design might be one of those things. By saying it's specified might really be a synonym for saying it's designed.
Well, I think you're on to something, but I wouldn't go so far as to say it's circular. When we say something specified, then what we're appealing to is something other than something that's purely mathematically tractable. Mm. And the first thing to answer when somebody points that is yes. And that's fine because we gain knowledge in many ways other than through the purely mathematical. In fact, many of the most important things that atheists and non-atheists together believe in are not mathematically tractable. You can't get there through a purely positivistic route. But when we say something specified, we're appealing to a broadly shared understanding that there's something there that needs to be explained. If you point to a butterfly and beside it is a pile of electrons in no particular order and say the butterfly is specified, it has function, it can fly, it can do amazing things. The pile beside it that has the exact same mass is not specified, at least in that sense. Then your opponent can say, well, you know, that's a subjective opinion. And I'm fine with them doing that because then you're basically putting them in the position of denying something that is clear to the senses of any sane human being. You know, like looking at a car and saying, okay, there's nothing specified about that car. It's no more interesting than metal and rubber and fuel lines that were just in a pile. And if you want to take that position, go ahead. But all reasonable people are going to go, no, that car is specified. It clearly speaks to us that there's something there that needs to be explained.
When you guys talk about complexity and then how rare something is, you talk about beyond the reach of chance. So if something might happen once every five times, then obviously chance is a major factor. But you guys set a threshold for the intelligent design movement, and you say that we consider something that has one chance in 10 with 150 zeros after it to be unreasonable to propose that this could happen by chance. That's describing more atoms than are in the universe by almost a factor of a Google.
Right. We've taken a huge number, and their information theorists and probability theorists have come up with different figures for what they call the universal probability bound, beyond which some specified event, they say, well, it can't just be by chance. That number that we came up with my co-author, William Dembski, he developed that number. He took a far larger, longer odds number than a lot of the other people in that field, because he wanted to make absolutely sure he was not being overly, you know.
Whereas that's the opposite of the Darwinist approach, like with Haldane's dilemma. They will make the most favorable assumptions for Darwinism and for one mutation to overcome a whole genome. They make the most favorable assumptions, and even then it's ludicrous. Whereas the intelligent design movement says, look, we will make it as difficult as possible, and we could still demonstrate that mutations and natural selection could not accomplish these things.
Yeah, there's an interesting, and I may not be able to come up with the name, but there was this interesting meeting back in the late 60s where some Darwinists just happened to be, this was in Europe, happened to be in at the same estate of some researcher, scientist, and there were some mathematicians who were also very advanced, prominent mathematicians, and they got to talking about the information problem with DNA. And the biologists there were quite confident that it was tractable and that, you know, Darwinism could handle the information problem of creating the cellular information. But the mathematicians, they started kind of working the numbers, and there was this big divide between them by the time it was over. And they ended up having a conference. But the mathematicians never came on board because they were like, sorry, you just don't have the goods here to make this mathematically tractable. And I guess the biologist who hadn't been particularly trained in probability theory, mathematics, you know, and had been trained in the dogma of Darwinism, you know, they stayed on the other side. So it was this funny kind of two academic worlds meeting and colliding. And in some ways, we still have that going on today.
And I have some of those particulars, thanks to Casey Luskin and his blog on that topic. It was actually in 1966, the Wistar Symposium.
Wistar, yeah. I had Wessex in my head. That's not right, Wessex, but it's Wistar. Yeah, the Wistar Symposium.
And it was in Philadelphia, which I remember. That's where Pops is from.
Yeah, the initial meeting was where they were just conversing was in somewhere in Europe. But then they said, you know, we need to have an actual conference about this so we can be more rigorous about this. And they set that for Philadelphia.
Well, let's update that story 50 years, a half a century later, when Gallup surveys scientists. And they ask them, do you believe in evolution? It is true, the vast majority of scientists believe in Darwinism. But when they break it down by discipline, it turns out that the mathematicians have the least confidence in Darwinism as compared to the biologists and astronomers and so on. And so I think that's an artifact of the reality that math is a tremendous stumbling block to belief in Darwinism.
You know, another stumbling block, if we use that term loosely here, since it's causing them to stumble into the truth, physicians, there was a poll done by a poll, I think the polling company was very reputable, it wasn't Christian-based or creationist-based, but they polled physicians and found that 60% of U.S. physicians, and these are what you might call practicing scientists, who probably have a much better working understanding of human biology than your average biologist, 60% of them rejected what you call pure Darwinism. In other words, Darwinism that leaves no room for intelligent design. Some of them took a kind of a theistic evolutionist view, where they thought that you had evolution, but you had to have God intelligently designing and helping it along actively. And others took a more traditional, straight intelligent design creationist view, 60%. And yet you get these biologists like, no intelligent, rational, you know, biologist would ever think this. What the physician, I had my brother-in-law, he's a medical doctor, and he said in his experience when he was at medical school, when they started some of their work, you know, really studying the human body and doing the anatomy work, several of them were agnostic or atheist. By the end, none of them were wow. confident that there was no wow. God or no design.
Well, you guys, in your book, you document all these different types of physicians and how many reject Darwinism, as we're talking about. And recently, there was a big study done of biology teachers in the U.S., and I think it was about 60%, almost two-thirds, refused to endorse Darwinism in the classroom. Instead, they would say things like, you have to learn it for the test, or you should make up your own mind, but they would not endorse Darwinism. So there's really something going on in the opposition to evolution. You guys talk about how the Christian faith is ridiculed on the Discovery Channel and on PBS. And you say that really what's happening is nature is replacing God, and materialism is really an idolatry of the modern mind. And so we do have, I think, an all-out war against faith in God, and it doesn't bode well for our culture or our country.
Right. If these materialists, if these pure Darwinists win the day, it's not going to bode well, because a culture that sees no place for the transcendent, no place for God, you lose the ground for a higher transcendent morality. You lose the ground for absolute morality. You end up in relativism. How do you defend the core values of, say, the United States under relativism? How do you another argue against the activities of a Stalin or Hitler if you're a relativist?
Well, you have
no moral ground to stand on.
Right.
So it is dangerous. The good news is that we've got more physical evidence than we've ever had before for design, because of the advances in telescopes and microscopes and other types of research tools we have. That's the good news. And also the internet, radio shows like yours, are getting the word out, doing an in run around these elites that are trying to control the news channels, the information channels. They can't really get away with that anymore. We can go around them and get to young people with the evidence of nature that God's put right there in front of us.
Mm-hmm. So the book is Intelligent Design Uncensored. The authors, William Dembski and Jonathan Witt. Jonathan, it really is a pleasure to talk with you. And so we'll point people to the book. And which website would help people keep in touch with your work the best?
Go to Discovery Institute.
Discovery.org.
Find links to my work and go to the Center for Science and Culture. And then it would ultimately just be two main books, this one, Intelligent Design Uncensored, and another co-authored book of mine, A Meaningful World, which goes into the evidence for genius in nature in more depth than this book. So
all right.
Those two books.
Well, thank you, Dr. Witt, for your work and for helping us out here where we're fighting the battle also.
Yeah, thank you.
God bless you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate that. Dr. Jonathan Witt with the Discovery Institute. He's a fellow with the Discovery Institute, and he is a researcher and an author, one of the leaders in the intelligent design movement. I mentioned earlier that he's the co-author of the script for a great DVD called The Privileged Planet. I highly recommend that DVD, along with these other two, Darwin's Dilemma, about the explosion in the Cambrian strata, the Cambrian explosion of life. What a great documentary. And then Unlocking the Mystery of Life. We have all three of these available, and they are great. We could sell them to you. You could get them online at Amazon, but we could sell them to you at $49.99 for all three. And of course, you'll help us to keep Real Science Friday on the air and our website open, kgov.com and realsciencefriday.com. So if at all possible, please go to our store, and kgov.com and realsciencefriday.com, they both bring you to the same place. But when you're there, you could click on our store and go to the science department, and there are really fabulous resources, including these three DVDs. And if you want a discount, then call us up, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278, and we'll get you all three for $49.99. And in our science department, we have a lot of really fun resources, including debates with atheists, a debate with a geophysicist on the age of the Earth, both of which I've participated in. We have a great debate that I wasn't involved with, but it's between a leading Christian and an atheist. It's called The Great Debate. And we just have so many neat materials to edify you so you can be stronger in your faith and then more effective at what we call apologetics, being able to defend our belief in the Creator God and that the Bible is God's Word and that Jesus Christ actually died on the cross for our sin and was raised from the dead, so that if we trust in Him, we can have everlasting life. That is the good news of the Bible, and it's the good news that comes to those who know that there is a God who made us, and we're made in His image, in His likeness. Evolutionists will say we're carbon-based. Carbon-based? It'd be more accurate to say that we're information-based. And information is not physical. Information is not made of matter. You could use matter to represent information, but information is not physical. And so when the Bible begins by telling us that God made man in His image and in His likeness, and so we are conscious and moral beings. We are self-aware. We are created knowing right from wrong. And there is a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every human being, so that when we come into existence in our mother's womb, or nowadays sometimes in a test tube, when we come into existence, Romans chapter 1 says that we know God. The world knows God, but then we reach the age of accountability. We read about in Romans 5, Romans 7, Deuteronomy chapter 1. We reach the age of accountability. We turn away from God, and our foolish hearts are darkened, so we do not honor Him as the Creator. But the knowledge of God is in us, and the evidence fills the cosmos. So as Paul wrote in Romans, they are without excuse if they reject Him. So please, if you're not a Christian, give us a call. We'll send you a DVD, Mount Moriah, Evidence for the Resurrection. The rest of you guys, kgov.com. May God bless you.
You can support the ministry of Bob Enyart Live by subscribing to Bob's monthly Bible studies, monthly videos, monthly sermons, or monthly classic TV shows at kgovstore.com. You can also support the show and make a monthly or one-time donation by calling 1-800-8-NYART or at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.